This is the Scorebook Live Today podcast. It's Thursday, October 17th. It's week 7 of the high school football season, and I'm joined, as always, by analyst, former NBA player, NCAA All-American, Dan Dickow in Spokane, and reporter Todd Millis in Tacoma. So, guys, the high school football season's heating up as we start to look toward postseason, and it's that time of year where we're starting to take a look at the basketball season, too. Do you guys feel like we're busy enough at this point?
Yeah, you guys are extremely busy with all the coverage that you guys have been providing for football. I've been busy getting myself geared up for the basketball season, and I know you guys are going to start transitioning at some point, but the difficult thing for you guys is you transition while you're also doing a great job covering the football playoffs. So I wish you guys the best of luck. I know the coverage has been great so far.
Yeah, I mean, we're a month away from basketball. I know college basketball, I think, kicked off their practices this week. You know, it's a little odd in mid-October starting to call around about some girls' basketball rankings, and I know you're doing the same thing with on the boys' side, Andy. So like Dan said, it's a, you know, It's not like going from basketball to baseball or whatnot. It sort of blends together here in the middle part of November and in December. But no rest for the weary, man. No rest for the weary. We're up for the challenge.
And Dan, you've been preparing for a lot of different items that we're looking forward to rolling out here as the basketball season approaches. But you've been preparing for months, so that's a lot to look forward to on the Scorebook Live Washington front there. But before we get to basketball, number one versus number two, Eastside Catholic versus O'Day. Last Friday, it was the marquee game of the regular season. It was a nationally relevant game. Eastside Catholic was a nationally ranked team going into the week. I think they were ranked as high as 11. O'Day, in an upset, beats Eastside Catholic 28-6. On Root Sports, Todd and I were both there. Just an enormous win, but one that kind of highlights what a model of consistency O'Day has been under its head coach, Monty Kohler, who is coaching his 35th season for the Fighting Irish this year. Piggybacking on something that we released on the website, scorebooklive.com/Washington, over the weekend, which is a look at all the active coaches with 150 or more wins across the state of Washington. The guy at the top of that list is Monty Kohler. This was, as he described, the biggest win perhaps of his entire career. Todd, does Monty get enough credit for a guy who's been around for so long? Do you think people are give him enough credit?
I don't think so. I mean, for a guy that stands as the second all-time winningest coach in state history, and if he decides he wants to stick around for another, 6 to 8 years, he'll certainly pass Sid Otten from Tumwater atop that list. Like you said, he's been the model of consistency. I think it's, sometimes consistency is boring. And you look at his team, they don't really kind of show themselves off the field very much. You don't see them on social media. You don't see his guys self-promoting. You don't see Monty self-promoting. Monty's very old school. He just wants to go to work. He wants to coach. You go to his practices. Their practices are run by a staff that seems like it's been around, 25, 30 years. They don't run the sexy offense. They run the power veer, and they've been doing it forever. It's not the high-flying passing attack. They just kind of go about their business and just sort of pound teams into submission and win football games and get to the playoffs. And sometimes they get knocked out in the first round or the quarterfinals. And a lot of the time they get past that. And they've won four state. He's won four state championships with that team. But in an era where we've had, especially at the Class 3A level, we've had kind of these two dynasties that they've been sort of operating among, Bellevue with Butch Goncharoff and all the winning they did and all the state championships they won. And now Eastside Catholic sort of taken the baton, the dynasty baton, so to speak, and kind of run with it here the last 4 or 5 years. They just sort of go about their business. And, when it's all said and done, I think he's one of the coaches that when he's done and we can look back in 5 or 6 years and go five or six years after he stepped down and go, gosh, man, Monty Kohler, what a great career he's had. And I think Friday was a great example of of how good a coach he is. I know you and I have talked about it consistently or constantly on some of our Facebook Live stuff and what we've written and now on the podcast. It was a fantastic job. His team was so disciplined on both sides of the ball and really dismantled Eastside Catholic up in Sammamish 28-6. It was a great win. And as you said, Monty, after the game, considered it as good a win, if not the best one he's ever had.
Kohler's 53 wins away from Sid Otten, as you said, who is the now retired. And so now Monty's 53 wins away from being the winningest ever coach in Washington high school football history. So certainly a number he's charging toward if he keeps doing it. But just to kind of hammer on your point, Todd, as we were collecting some of the top highlights from around the state, which usually we don't have a problem doing because there are so many. Folks who watched our highlights to the end and saw that our number one highlight this week, and shout out to producer Gray Reed in Spokane for putting those together as always, but it was a 10-minute and 44-second ground and pound drive by O'Day. That was the top highlight of the week, and it kind of goes against what a highlight even is. But at the same time, I mean, it just kind of underscores the model of consistency that has been O'Day football and how that was at its peak last week. Dan, we're talking here about an even-keeled coach who has achieved success over a long period of time and really etched himself as one of the top coaches in his class. Those themes ring any bells for you? Have you played for any coach that sort of mirrors that description?
Well, I think two coaches stand out to me when you talk about the consistency, but how you become consistent at any level, whether it's high school, college, or pros, is you kind of have a philosophy that you believe in and you hold players accountable to it. At the high school level, you hold families and parents accountable to it as well. So, you know, the two that come to mind for myself are, the first one would be Al Aldridge, who was the Prairie Girls head coach for the longest time, and I'll touch on him in a second. But the other one would be Mark Few at Gonzaga, who I played for. You know, Al Aldridge, a lot of people viewed him maybe as gruff and, you know, a disciplinarian. Especially when I was in high school, that's kind of the way some of us viewed him. But when I was on the guys' side in high school playing, but then you look at how much success the Prairie Girls had when he was there, when I was at school, and then when I left, and I kept following and hearing different things of how successful they were, and then getting to know Al a little bit later on as far as a coach, when I thought I was going to go into the coaching realm, talking to him about how he structures his program, you know, how he builds workouts, how he builds practices, how he builds a culture around his program. You know, one of the things that you learn or you realize right off the bat is, you know, there's a consistency in everything that he looked at and the details of his program and holding players accountable to come to practice every day and work their hardest for the team's success. You know, it's been pretty cool to see and amazing to see. And one of my disappointments as an athlete throughout my career was I couldn't win a state title. My wife, who also went to Prairie High School, she has a state title with Al Aldridge. So I hear his name mentioned a few times around our house during the basketball season. Maybe when we're talking about my son's youth team or different things, she'll bring back different memories of things that he said at practice or things that he did as a coach. And so I think it always comes back to the consistency that he had. So that's a high school example. An example at the college level would be Coach Few at Gonzaga. I mean, he's been the head coach now for over 20 years. Every single year he's been in the NCAA tournament. He's the all-time winningest coach at the NCAA Division I level, and there's a reason why. There's a way that he views the game. There's a few non-negotiables that he has for players in his program, and then few non-negotiables that are specific to each possession or position, and he holds you accountable to those. And he gets the most out of players. And it sounds a lot like how you and Todd described what Monty Kohler does at O'Day. And that's have a philosophy, believe in your philosophy, stick to your philosophy, and get people to buy in to your philosophy, and just grind it out day by day by day, and you will have success. Now, granted, you have to have talent. You know, Day's probably had incredible football talent over the years. Prairie Girls had talent down in Southwest Washington for a number of years. They still do. And Coach Few at Gonzaga's had talent. But, again, talent's one thing. To get that talent to buy in and to be consistent with their effort and their details is a completely other thing.
Yeah, and let me just kind of add something here. You know, I don't want to diss on different personalities here. I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed the Bill Backhamses and the Marty O'Briens of high school basketball, the Bob Ames, the Jeremy Thielbars, you know, the sort of the extroverts, the extroverted personalities in the coaching profession. I don't want to seem like, you know, hey, you know, you can't be an extrovert and be also not be a successful coach too. I mean, we've had some very successful coaches on the other spectrum of this, but I just, you know, from an attention standpoint, from a credibility standpoint, you know, Monty, the question was, does Monty get the credit he deserves? And for a guy that's won as much as he does, I don't think people talk about him enough, the consistency and the success he's had. So I don't want to, you know, credit to all those guys that are great with us and can fill up a reporter's notepad. So I just wanted to make that point as well.
Yeah. And I love that point, Todd, because each athlete and each coach kind of has their own way of going about their business. You know, Coach Few has kind of evolved into having a, you know, large platform that's listened to nationally. And he got himself, you know, some criticism a week or two ago when he made a comment about the new legislative act in regards to NCAA athletes being paid in California. But, you know, I think it's great when, you know, coach has their philosophy is like, hey, I don't necessarily need the attention. I don't search for it. What I do is impact kids at the level that I'm coaching. So I agree with you. I think it's great.
So moving on, I mean, we'll get to plenty of football talk in our second segment. But before we take a break, college basketball practice is now underway. High school basketball practice in the state here in Washington opens up in about a month. Basketball's in the near future. We're certainly talking about it behind the scenes a lot. Dan, you're leading the charge there for sure. But 1 month out from the start of high school basketball practice, do you guys have like one boy and one girl that you're looking forward to seeing play this season? Two people who, as you start to kind of look at the high school basketball season, you're thinking, this is a person whose storyline compels me and whose skill set I think will be an exciting brand and something to look forward to.
You can go first, Todd.
Yeah, I mean, I have an interesting philosophy about basketball. I don't think basketball is supposed to be easy. I like high work rate players. And, you know, the two players I'm most interested in seeing, and I've covered a lot of girls basketball over the year. I've spent a lot of time on the girls basketball court. And I've thoroughly enjoyed watching Mia Hughes play at Woodinville. She'll be a junior this year. She's kind of an undersized post. I'm hoping, you know, I think the thought is that, you know, as she develops her game and maybe, you know, especially from more on the perimeter, that she can maybe develop into a wing. Unfortunately, she's probably not going to get to be 6'2 or 6'3 or 6'4, where I think she would be a hands down, she would be a really good Division I recruit. Right now, she's kind of a tweener. I just love watching her play basketball. I watched her in a double overtime game not take a minute off on both ends. I mean, she is full bore. She understands the angles of getting to the basket, rebounding, things like that. I'm just looking to see how her game has improved heading into her third year as a varsity starter. I think she's already set the Woodinville career scoring mark, or she's on the verge of doing that, even though she's more of a weak side player, more of a rebounder, you know, getting points off putbacks and things like that. And then on the boys side, a guy that I really grew to appreciate last year, and he was down at Federal Way High School last year, and now he's going to be at a second stint, I think, up at Garfield, and it's Tari Eason. And my personal opinion is, and again, I don't rank these guys. I'm not that type of reporter, but as a guy that, you know, likes basketball a certain way, I don't care who transferred in or out of state. I thought going into this year, he should have been the best senior recruit in the state. Now, it'll be interesting to see. He started at Garfield. You know, his parent, his mom and him moved up here from California for family reasons, and then he settled at Garfield. And when Brandon won his state championship a couple years ago, he was a sophomore in that team that didn't play very much, and he didn't play at all in the Tacoma Dome. Now, that was a really, really good Garfield team with a lot of talent and a lot of seniors. And, you know, I don't know if it was a bitter breakup or not, but he came down to Federway, played alongside, you know, McDaniels last year. And he was a lot more of a consistent performer from an effort standpoint, I thought, for the Eagles. And it's going to be interesting. Now he's back with Brandon. It'll be interesting to see how Brandon incorporates him and utilizes him. I think he'll have obviously a much, much different role for the Bulldogs this year, playing in the Metro League against some of the great teams in the state, you know, Rainier Beach and O'Day, Eastside Catholic, Ingram. So I'm looking forward to seeing him back in the Metro League and him kind of taking that next step and hopefully, you know, sort of solidifies himself as the number one guy coming out in 2020.
I think for me, you know, we'll start on the girls' side. I haven't seen this girl play in person, but I've seen plenty of highlights. I've seen plenty of clips, and that would be Haley Van Lith at Cashmere. Obviously, Freddie Rico, who was the National Coach of the Year when he was at Central Valley, is part of our Scorebook Live staff. And you know, he's shared with me a lot about, you know, the last couple years in the landscape of girls basketball in the state. And he's kind of shared about, you know, just how good he thinks Van Lith is, you know, and where she fits kind of historically. But, you know, when I watch these clips, what I see is a player that is very creative and plays with a ton of confidence. And that's what makes her kind of the girl that I think is going to be fun to watch throughout this high school basketball season. On the guys' side, it would be John Christofilos at O'Day. O'Day is a team that, yeah, they won the 3A title last year. They're probably going to be the favorites to win it this year because of Banchero. But they were injured throughout last year. Christofilos had some injuries at the end of the year. Christofilos did not really play much at all during the evaluation periods in the spring and summer. And so it'll be interesting to see how he responds and bounces back from his injuries. A former teammate of mine when I was at the University of Washington, Michael Johnson, trains him over in the Seattle area quite a bit. And he's had some really good things to say about his game and how he can shoot it and how he's becoming more explosive and he's becoming a little bit better off the bounce. And so that's one of the things, you know, when I kind of talk to different coaches and players that I used to play with around the state, you know, I ask if there's any up-and-comers that are catching their eye. You know, and Michael Johnson, he was very adamant in saying, hey, Christofilos, when he's healthy, and he is healthy now, he's pretty darn good. So I'm really interested to see how he's bounced back from his injuries, because there were a number of colleges, even at the Pac-12 level, that were starting to show quite a bit of interest before his injuries. You know, and he was going to play for Carl Howell and Washington Supreme over the summer, and Carl, who's a friend of mine as well, has had nothing but good things to say about the kid as well.
Two great players, Dan. Great selections. Mine, I'll start with the boys. It'll be pretty much a layup, this pick, or rather a slam dunk, and that's someone who's already been mentioned, Paolo Banchero at O'Day. I look at someone like Banchero, who could be the highest-rated recruit to come out of the state of Washington when it's all said and done. He enters his junior season at O'Day. He was dominant last year for the Fighting Irish. Someone I haven't really seen play a whole lot. He's certainly as highly touted as it comes, a five-star who's, I believe, as we record this podcast, is taking a visit to Duke, if I'm correct, and reading his Twitter account. But, you know, the last time the state of Washington had a player like this, I mean, let's harken back just only a couple of years to Michael Porter Jr. And Nathan Hale. I was still in college at the time. I wasn't covering high school sports on a full-time basis. I never got to see Michael Porter Jr. play in high school. I think with Banchero, the sentiment there, he's going to draw really big crowds. He's going to be a really exciting player, and it's just going to be fun to watch somebody who will conceivably play at a really high level, perhaps the highest level, pretty soon. Somebody perform on the high school stage in Washington. So he's my boy. Girl I'm looking forward to seeing is somebody who just so happened to have written a player diary in on scorebooklive.com/Washington that ran over the weekend. You can find that there. That's Anaya Hampton at Hudson's Bay. Anaya Hampton enters her sophomore year. She is a point guard. She's 5'7". She is a scorer. She's a facilitator. And she really has a fascinating story. I was able to cover her throughout last season, her freshman year, when I was at the Columbian. And she essentially led Hudson's Bay to its best finish since 2007. And its second postseason appearance of all time as a program. The Hudson's Bay is a school in Vancouver that has a ton of history, one of the oldest schools, if not the oldest, in Vancouver. But when it comes to girls basketball, I mean, she complained about it last year, where she said, "I would be in PE and look up at the rafters and not see any banners that said girls basketball." Well, Hudson's Bay returns not only Hampton as a sophomore, who led the team in scoring last year, but they return multiple all-league selections, essentially their entire team. And it's going to be an interesting storyline to see how this team led by Hampton challenges the traditional powers in the 3A Greater St. Helens League. And when you look at traditional powers there, that's the Prairie Falcons, Dan, your alma mater, who are coming off a 3A state championship. So Anaya Hampton is my girl's pick. Paolo Banchero, my boy's pick. So before we take a quick break, we're going to bring you a segment that we've featured before called Bring the Links. And this is where the three of us share something, a story, a piece of media, something that we encountered over the last week since we last recorded that doesn't have to directly relate back to high school sports, but certainly can. Does one of you guys want to start?
The article that stands out to me right now caught my eye a couple days ago on ESPN.com. It was My First Basket. It was an article that kind of had a few current NBA players talking about their first basket in the NBA. It was kind of like their welcome to the NBA moment, where they finally got a bucket and felt like they belonged. For me, it made me kind of reminisce and think back to the first basket that I had in the NBA, in my first NBA game. It was actually, I was with the Atlanta Hawks my rookie year. We were at New Jersey playing the Nets in the old Meadowlands Arena that thankfully is no longer, because it was not a very nice arena, to say the least. But my first field goal attempt in the pros, I got the ball thrown to me on the left wing right in front of the bench with the shot clock winding down, and kind of had to just throw it up there. I was like, thanks, guys. Appreciate that one. And then shortly thereafter, my first made basket was kind of a right-to-left crossover towards the top, and then finished with the left hand off the glass was my first basket in the NBA. And so, read through the article, brought back some good memories, and I think that ties in really well with, the start of a new high school basketball season and many players that are moving up from freshman or JV to the varsity are going to have their first opportunity to have their first basket in quote unquote the big leagues. And so that should be a real cool moment for a lot of kids.
See the things, Andy, that we can't relate to. Hey, I want to stay in state with my story link this week, and it comes up from our friends up to the north here at the Everett Herald. Cameron Van Thiel wrote a great story about some of the Lake Stevens High School football players. And I'll give you some background. There's a Lake Stevens grad up there. Her name is Alicia Sue Wright, and she's got a rare form of cancer, and she has a 4-year-old son. She wanted to, it's been kind of dour around the house, and she wanted to do something special for a 4-year-old son for his birthday. and put out something on, you know, a Facebook support group saying, hey, you know, I'll pay somebody to come dress up as a superhero and come to my son's birthday. Well, I think it was Dallas Landeros. He's the running back from Lake Stevens. Saw this, thought it was a great idea. And actually, the day that this happened, he was set to take a recruiting trip to Central Washington for football, and decided to postpone that so he could corral some of his buddies off the football team, and they showed up all dressed up as superheroes. Landeros was in a Black Panther costume. Division I cornerback Kason Kinchin was dressed up as Spider-Man. Wazoo commit Dylan Killeney was Iron Man. Quarterback, you know, Tanner Jellison was Hulk. And then Drew Carter, who's a guy that we're going to write about here later this week, is one of our top underclassmen. He has the flowing locks, and he came in as Thor. So all, you know, 8 to 10 of these football players showed up at this kid's birthday party and gave him a treat of a lifetime. It's a really heartwarming story. And, you know, in an era where sometimes you read about what these kids are doing for themselves, it's kind of nice to sometimes read about how these teams and players are sort of serving their community. It was a really heartwarming story, and take a look.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Todd. That was a great story. I enjoyed reading that from our friends up north at the Everett Herald. My story, while I'm tempted to share the story in The Athletic by Seth Davis on how Gonzaga built a contender that our own Dan Dickow participated in. That was a great read. I'm going to share a story about the unbreakable bond between DeAndre Hopkins, Houston Texans wide receiver, and his mom, Sabrina Greenlee, that was written in the ESPN magazine by Mina Kimes. Really, really great story that came out yesterday, Wednesday. Hopkins' mom was blinded in an acid attack when Hopkins was 10 years old. She was eventually blinded as a result of the attack. And she now comes to every game of her son's and sits right near the front. And so whenever he scores a touchdown, she can't see. Her two daughters are flanking her left and right at every game. And they kind of act as the color commentary for what's going on the field. And even though she can't see, as the story illustrates, when Hopkins scores, he runs straight to the end zone, and he makes sure and jumps and hands her the ball so that she knows that he can see her. And so it's a really long story, really in-depth about their background, really touching read that, you know, that certainly transcends sports. So each of these stories, including this one, I'll link in the show notes when you're listening to this, so you can easily access all three of them. But before then, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, Todd and I are going to discuss the next one versus two high school football matchup and several other storylines across the state in football.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
We are back, and as we talked about last week, O'Day, Eastside Catholic, 1-2 in week 6. Kicked off 3 weeks of 1-2s across all classifications here in Washington. This week we've got another one. Todd, you are going to be there, and it really highlights kind of a theme for this week and with small schools, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those rare weeks where it seems like the better games around the state are in the the Class 2A level and smaller. I mean, we could highlight a few of those. WF West, Tumwater. Both undefeated, number one versus number seven playing. Monty, Hoquiam, a great rivalry down there in Grays Harbor County. We've got the rematch of Lennon Christian, Mount Baker. We just have a lot of really good small school games. You're going to be, I think, at you know, the Hawkinson-Kelso game. So we get a chance to see Hawkinson. And then I'm going to be – this is my first trip to Onalaska. I'm really looking forward to it. I know the town's buzzing. They play in that really good Pacific League down there. Southwest Washington – the Southwest Washington District in 2B football has just been ridiculous the last few years. Seven of the eight quarterfinal teams were from that district. All four semifinal teams last year, state semifinal teams, were from this district. And you're getting the remaining two undefeated teams playing each other this week for pretty much the unanimous number one spot. And I don't see either one of these teams losing from here on out, to be honest with you, heading into the playoffs. So Napavine goes to Onalaska. It's a big moment for Mazen Saad and his group. They run a power, you know, they're a power running team. They got one of the best workhorse running backs in the classification in Ashton Hayde. He's a 1,000-yard rusher. He's already got 15 touchdowns. You know, he doesn't look that athletic, but he's able to squeeze through and power through people. He's a really, and he's been productive for his whole career down there. And then Lucas Krieger is the quarterback. He's their big play guy. He kind of hides behind the line. He's a kind of a smaller guy and has made some big plays for them this year. And then they've got Alex Frazier, who's a really good offensive lineman. This is a matchup of two of, if not the most physical teams, arguably two of the most physical football teams in 2B. But, you know, Napavine's got some great players, too. They've got Lathan Demarest, who's in his first year as a starting quarterback. He's a dual threat. He's got, you know, 766 yards passing, 877 yards rushing. Probably the MVP of that league down there. And he's running behind, you know, a guy that we need to know about. He's a sophomore. He's a lineman. He's going to be one of the best players in the state, regardless of classification over the next 2 years. His name's Keith Olson. He plays inside on the defensive line. He plays tackle. You know, he comes from a family of athletes, and he kind of paves the way for this group. It's going to be a really, really good game between a team that's looking to kind of join the elite and a program in Napavine that's been there, done that, played in these big games seemingly all the time over the last 7 or 8 years. I'm really looking forward to going down and seeing these two teams play in what should be a 2B blockbuster.
You talk about those themes in both programs, and you wrote a nice story that published yesterday on scorebooklive.com/Washington. Listeners, you can find it there, and we can link it in the show notes as well. But with those themes that you described, I mean, is that how these teams feel? I mean, you talked to both sides going into this week. What was kind of what was the temperature of both teams? Are they going to rise to the occasion, or are they kind of downplaying the significance of this game?
Well, you talked to Josh Fay at Napavine. They've already played the Adnas and the Kalamas. That's just this year already, and they've beaten both teams. But what they've done the last 4 or 5 years, this has sort of a been there, done that moment. They don't seem to get too worked up over a game like this. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, both sides think this is a big game. But it's sort of like, we've proven it, have they? And you talked to Mazen a little bit from the Onalaska side. You know, this is a real proving point for this team. They haven't broken through like maybe some of the coaches in their league thought they might by this point. And this is their year. This is their year to go win a state championship. They get Napavine at home. All the pressure to me is on Alaska to break through and win this game and be the remaining unbeaten. We have them ranked number one. I know AP has Napavine ranked number one, but this is their proving point moment before they head into the meat of their schedule. They haven't played Adna. They haven't played Kalama. They've played the easier part of their schedule early on. So, they're looking at it two different ways, but both of them trying to sort of downplay it as just sort of a week six matchup when we both know a week seven matchup when we both know it's a pretty big small school classification game around the state.
Certainly on scorebooklive.com/Washington, the site I wrote in our notebook that kind of touched on the top stories around the western part of the state about a kid at Friday Harbor named Kyson Jackson, who's enjoying a breakout season for a team that a couple years ago won like two games in 2 years, and now is sitting at 5-1. Well, they have a running back who has nearly 1,200 yards and 17 touchdowns. Really had a nice conversation with their head coach, Brock Houck, who was formerly a defensive coordinator there, has been promoted within the school four times in the past year. In the past couple years, he serves as the athletic director as well as the football coach there now, but was really drawn to this group of players as a defensive coordinator when this now group of seniors was freshmen. And he's just, you know, he just said, yeah, there was a specific group of player of specific class that just kept me in this. So it's interesting. I kind of went into this story, seeing, and having brought to my attention this breakout season by this running back, Kyson Jackson, who he's a junior, by all accounts, from what we believe is, I think, the third best total this year behind the running back from NTIAT and Cannon Katzer from Mount Spokane, when it comes to rushing yards. But beyond that stat and that one line was, you know, a story about a program that that has turned itself around, and that's kind of been a theme on this podcast in the last couple of weeks. We talked about it when the story was published a couple of weeks ago on Ingram in Seattle and what they've done the past couple of years, what they're continuing to do, and the direction they're continuing to trend. And not all too dissimilar of a story here in Friday Harbor. They poked into our 2B top 10 rankings, and they will are in a good position to take that one spot, one postseason spot out of the 2B Northwest League, which they did not get after they lost a tiebreaker to Concrete last year. But before I talk about the game I'm going to be at tomorrow, Friday, I want to share this quote from Brock Houck at Friday Harbor that really struck me. He said, "When you're going through the tough parts, you're just starting to build. It feels like you're never going to get there, and there's a lot of sleepless nights wondering if you're ever going to figure it out. It feels good to have it where it's at now. There's a lot of hard work from everyone, kids and coaches included." I thought that was a really honest kind of reflection of what it's like to take over a program that a coach has a vision for and a certain players have a vision for. That certainly stands, the vision stands at the end of a long road. So, you know, that was something that I was struck by. But we'll move on. Before we get out of here, I'm going to talk a little bit about Hawkinson and Kelso, two teams who are in different classifications. Kelso at the 3A level, Hawkinson at the 2A level. Hawkinson, of course, the two-time defending 2A state champions. Kelso has built a winning tradition. They have several, I think four of their last seasons have been winning seasons. You know, certainly a program that is one to be reckoned with, especially when they play at home, and they're going to be doing that tomorrow, Friday. Rick Steele at Hawkinson, which after losing early in the season to Archbishop Murphy, which was a stunner that we've talked about on this podcast, knocked Hawkinson off the top spot in the state. Rick Steele said, you know, we have to play some games. We need a good quality opponent. You know, he kind of said, they've played games, you know, I think in their league, he kind of alluded to, they've really trounced through their league. There's no team, that even really comes close to Hawkinson in that league. Thought it was going to be Washougal. They dropped a game against Ridgefield. Washougal and Hawkinson still are yet to play. But in Kelso, they get a really big physical team who's got experience, who you know, is going to be fighting for a postseason spot, and just football fans always want to see the top teams from their region play each other, and Hawkinson and Hawkinson's been a team that I think a lot of the bigger schools in Southwest Washington in recent years don't really have an incentive to play because the game doesn't count for anything, and Hawkinson's really good, so I'm sure they don't want to lose. But this game will be, you know, a test between, you know, a kind of a rare matchup between two teams like that. So I'm certainly looking forward to it. It gives us a chance to cover the defending 2A state champs for the first time this season.
Yeah, and just to kind of to elaborate on your point, what was maybe taboo 10, 15 years ago, playing out of your own classification or maybe playing a classification down, I think those, you know, with the advent and the growing of 7-on-7 and these guys, you know, you'll see a Hawkinson play a Union, or you'll see a Mount Baker, you know, or Lakewood play a Bothell in 7-on-7. Now, I don't think these schools fear playing up, and maybe schools, bigger schools, don't have the hesitation to play down. I know Union went to Steilacoom this year in a 4A versus 2A game. I think it was the first time, I think, in state history where a 2A school had played a defending 4A state champ. Tom Waters played some bigger schools in the past, but I think that's something we're going to see more and more as championship teams and their coaches kind of fill out their non-league schedule, especially when you mentioned Hawkinson's league hasn't provided a whole lot of resistance for them. So it's going to be a good test for Hawkinson and probably their last good test before they enter the postseason. I hope we see more of these matchups, especially regionally down in the years to come.
Yeah, they're fun. They're good for fans, and they're fun, you know, barring the obvious concerns about, you know, playing games where you risk injury. You know, I'm glad this is happening. Head to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the Scorebook Live Today podcast, which you can also subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. That includes Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and so on and so forth. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks for joining me, Todd. Thanks to Dan earlier, and we will talk to you next week.